Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Tea Party movement is not a top-down operation. It's a ground-up call to action that is forcing both parties to change the way that they're doing business, and that's beautiful.
And the one thing about the Tea Party that's interesting is it really is equal parts chastisement to both parties. You know, Republicans doubled the debt when we were in charge, and then Democrats are tripling the debt.
I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you.
Record-breaking turnout in the state's most frustrated regions sent a message to Albany today. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
In order, we heard Sarah Palin, Rand Paul, Christine O'Donnell, and Carl Paladino, two Tea Party leaders whose stars are still rising, and two who turned out to be short-lived shooting stars. With 40% of voters in last week's election saying they support the Tea Party movement, a new book by two leading pollsters argues that the Tea Party movement could go even further than most people are talking about, all the way to a third-party split with the Republicans and perhaps even to a Tea Party presidency in 2012. And mindful of that Carl Paladino phrase at the end of that last clip, Scott Rasmussen and Doug Schoen have written a book called Mad as Hell, How the Tea Party Movement is Fundamentally Remaking Our Two-Party System. Doug and Scott, good morning. Thank you very much for coming on. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Thank you for having us.
You write in the conclusion to the book that the meeting of a charismatic leader with the Tea Party movement could prove to be a very powerful force in the Republican presidential primaries in 2012 or in an independent candidacy movement in 2012. Who wants to start, and how possible do you think such a movement might be?
Doug, why don't you take it first?
Yeah, sure. Well, here's what I would say, Brian. Look, I think it's undeniable that given the success even of Paladino and O'Donnell, who obviously flamed out, but their success in Republican primaries, I think it's almost axiomatic that in 2012, in the primaries, we're going to see the impact of the Tea Party movement being felt and felt clearly. There's no state, region, or community that is immune to the appeal, certainly in the Republican Party, of the Tea Party movement. In terms of a third party, you know, who can really tell? I mean, I don't think it's likely. I think Scott is probably more agnostic than I am. But you know what? We live in volatile times with an uncertain mood. And the one thing that I would say is the Tea Party movement is not wedded to the Republicans. Could they break away? It's certainly possible. Would they be a strong force on their own? I don't rule anything out. Scott?
So, Doug, who might that charismatic leader be? Probably Sarah Palin?
Well, let's just say she said already that she would be prepared to be a candidate if nobody else stepped up. And at the very least, if you look at her appeal on the stump, she is a charismatic leader with strong appeal to the Tea Party movement. That's for sure.
You know, when I look at this, we just did some polling right after this past election and found that 78% of Republican primary voters have a favorable opinion of the Tea Party. And at the same time, 72% of them say that Republican congressional leaders are out of touch with the party's base. So clearly the Tea Party movement's going to have a huge impact in the 2012 primary process. I would take it a little differently than Doug says it. I think that the likely nominee will at the very least be a friend of Sarah Palin's. There's a lot of people in the Republican Party, a lot of people in the Tea Party movement who think that Sarah Palin represents their values well, but they're not sure that they want her as their presidential nominee.
Tea Party listeners, would you consider making the Tea Party a third party, or under what circumstances would you split the Tea Party off from the Republican Party? Tea Party movement supporters, call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Does that scare the daylights out of you because you don't want to wind up like Ralph Nader? You know, helping to give the presidency to the dreaded Democrats in this case? Or do you think maybe the Republican Party is unredeemable? 212-433-WNYC if you are a Tea Party movement supporter, according to you. 212-433-9692. On that third party question for Scott Rasmussen and Doug Schoen, authors of Mad as Hell, How the Tea Party Movement is fundamentally Remaking Our Two-Party System. again, I don't know who wrote which paragraph, so either of you can take this, but you write that the first thing the Tea Party needs to do next is address its fringe elements. And we played the Christine O'Donnell and the Carl Palladino, as well as the Palin and the Paul. How would it do that?
Well, look, I don't think it is our place, and I don't think we were trying to effectively impose outside discipline on a movement that, as Sarah Palin correctly suggested, is a ground-up grassroots movement. But to me, the problem of Christine O'Donnell or Sharon Angle or Carl Palladino is not a problem of a political movement that Scott quite accurately describes as being estranged from the Republican leadership. Mm-hmm. But this is the problem of individual candidates who were nominated in spite of, not because of, whatever their weaknesses may be as individual candidates. It just reflects the desire of the Tea Party movement and their supporters to reject the conventional leadership. So I don't believe that the so-called fringe elements are all that pervasive or important, but would the Tea Party have been more successful if they had candidates more like Marco Rubio running in Nevada, New York, and Delaware? I'm certainly sure that that would have been the case.
You know, on the other hand, though, when Marco Rubio began, we were told repeatedly that he would never be a successful candidate. You had to have Charlie Crist to win that nomination. So it is a different mindset. I think what's really fascinating about this is, you know, there is no particular Tea Party. There is no one voice for this movement, which is really its strength, but also creates challenges as you go through it. And when you talk about addressing the fringe elements, I would look at it from a slightly different perspective. The Tea Party movement is strongest when it taps into the concerns that are shared by a majority of Americans. And that includes fiscal policy issues in a big way. And so the more that Tea Party members, the more that Tea Party activists can find ways to focus on those things that unite them with the majority around the country, the stronger they'll be. The more they get decided on fringe issues, the less effective they'll be.
In the context of the first thing the Tea Party needs to do is address its fringe elements, yep. What about pushing forward Michelle Bachmann for a House leadership position now? Is she potentially a high-profile black eye with some of her tendencies and past statements, or don't you see her in that light?
I don't believe that anybody who was in Congress before 2010 is really a good spokesperson for the Tea Party, because the Tea Party movement grew up outside the Beltway. And anybody who has been in office before, really, they may want to jump in front of the parade, but they're not really the spokesman for that group.
Let's take some phone calls from Tea Party supporters. Paul and Nutley are on WNYC. Hi. Paul, are you there? All right, we'll try to come back to Paul. How about Joe in Staten Island? Joe, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Okay, well, like Layton said, we're within the Republican Party. Nobody's better than Rand Paul. Sometimes win Rand Paul and Marco Rubio is great. The girl from Delaware was a disappointment, but we'll work with the win the Republican primary and nominate. I predict that Sarah Palin is going to win.
Would you like
because
to see?
Her book was number one. You're the type of person who buys a book for $20. You're the type of person who votes in a primary.
Are you ready to see, not that she's necessarily ready to do this, but would you be ready to vote for Sarah Palin on a Tea Party ticket if there was also a Republican candidate for president?
No, I would write to her and say, suggest stay within the party.
Thank you very much. Mike in Butler, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
I just wanted to say, I sort of was a Tea Party supporter originally when it was more of the libertarian Ron Paul fiscal responsibility, but more of an anti-war thing. And I feel like it's sort of been taken over, the people like Sarah Palin, this it's almost become this xenophobic... the Republican Party has sort of taken it over, and that sort of disenchanted me from the whole Tea Party idea now.
Mike, thank you. Scott, that's how much of a tension do you see between the Tea Party and the Republican Party in the new House with this notion of the Republican Party taking it over?
You know, I think it's a question of which is going to do more to take over the other, but there's going to be an incredible tension. The first step for House Republicans is going to be fairly easy because the House will vote to repeal the health care law. That's something that they talked about. It's something the Tea Party will support and most Republicans will support. But after that, it gets very difficult, and there will be a lot of tensions coming to the surface. It's also, the caller mentioned the anti-war movement. It was interesting, Ron Paul, when he was being considered as a presidential candidate in 2008. We did test him as a third-party candidate. He actually drew more support from Democrats than from Republicans, and that was obviously before the Tea Party became a brand. But I think it is a tension within the Tea Party movement itself.
Andrew in Woodmere, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm not really sure. I'm a big Tea Party supporter out in Woodmere, New York, and I know that I've spoken to Tea Partiers in Nebraska and Oklahoma. Our views are so disparate. As much as I think America needs a third party, I don't think the Tea Party could really sustain itself.
What discrepancies did you find between yourself and those in the Midwest?
Well, a lot of libertarian issues. I'm a fiscal conservative, a little bit socially liberal, uh-huh. And they weren't willing to even negotiate on any of those issues. I feel, and especially military spending, that's... Being on Long Island, I don't know anybody in the military. It's not a big deal, but it seems like they're out there. They're willing to tackle everything else, all the entitlement program, but not really looking at the military spending.
Doug, Andrew, thank you for your call. And, Doug, do you think that represents a potential regional split? I mean, what he described there is almost the classic regional divide within the Republican Party. The Northeast, fiscally conservative but socially liberal Republicans, who are now kind of fading away, and, you know, the more socially conservative as well as fiscally conservative Republicans elsewhere in the country. Is that going to just replicate itself in this new conservative movement?
I think, again, time will tell, Brian. I think the dominant sentiment, though, in the Tea Party, which Scott was alluding to, is what needs emphasis, which is this emphasis on fiscal discipline, cutting spending, cutting taxes, trying to balance the budget. There are going to be points of emphasis. Defense spending is a huge issue that there's no clarity on. But the essence of the Tea Party movement, as we emphasize in Mad as Hell, is the fact that you have people of diverse views with common views on these core issues of principle vis-a-vis spending have come together. And as you pointed out in your introduction, Brian, 40% of America or more support the Tea Party. So there's sort of unity and diversity, if I could.
Have you done any polling, Scott, on what people mean by Tea Party supporter when they call themselves that? Is this just, you know, to some degree a Rorschach test, or it's whatever the media tells you that it is, or something like that?
You know, we've tested it in lots of different ways, and about one out of five Americans say that they consider themselves a part of the Tea Party movement, and a much larger numbers have a favorable opinion of it. What we do find is that in the last 6 months, it has taken on a more partisan tinge in terms of perceptions because Democrats have become much more opposed to the Tea Party. But it's interesting, Tea Party members themselves don't reciprocate that, and they certainly don't think kindly of the Republican Party, or at least the Republican Party as it's been.
Scott Rasmussen and Doug Schoen, prominent pollsters, authors now of Mad as Hell, How the Tea Party Movement is Fundamentally Remaking Our Two-Party System. And let's try Paul in Nutley again. I think he's there now. Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I don't see the Tea Party splitting from the Republican Party. I see them, you know, as one and the same. And I just think that Tea Party represents like a newer generational shift of leaders. And, you know, and I just contrast that to the Democratic Party that's, you know, led by Reid and Pelosi, who are over 70. And just pick up on one comment that you just made. I think the media is trying to make us think that this is extreme, and I, you know, reject that any of the candidates, including O'Donnell and Palladino, were extreme, you know, in the last election.
How about extreme or unqualified?
I, you know, I think both O'Donnell and Palladino were extremely qualified. I mean, look at Obama's background before he was president. I mean, never ran anything. He was a senator. You could make an argument he wasn't qualified.
Paul, thank you very much. Did one of you want to react to that?
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, when you look at O'Donnell and you look at Palladino, there were clear areas, both in terms of personality, temperament, and the lifestyle, that raised questions about their availability to serve, that as far as I could tell, had nothing to do with their ideology. And the fact that they were, in fact, nominated, I think, speaks to the level of anger that Scott and I have written about.
What about Sharon Engel on the question of extremism, with some of the things that she was reported to have said, like Second Amendment remedies and things like that?
You know, I think Sharon Engel was a weak candidate, and it wasn't, again, so much the Tea Party label as a lot of individual things that she said during the campaign, in advance of the campaign. But what's missing in this discussion, I think it's easy to suggest that a lot of these people were not qualified to hold office, but nearly 8 out of 10 Americans trust their own judgment more than any member of Congress on economic issues. Mm. Most trust their own judgment on economic matters more than they trust the judgment of the President of the United States. There is a question of whether some of these people were qualified, but most in the Tea Party and a large majority of American voters doubt that many of the existing elected politicians are qualified for the job.
And on the question of the media, I mean, you guys are more associated with Fox News than any other particular media outlet, but, you know, a lot of liberals think that the media helped to create the Tea Party. The media helped to promote the Tea Party by giving it so much attention when it was first a very small thing. You have any thought about that?
Yeah, I actually have a dramatically opposite view. I think that the media did everything they could to minimize attention to the Tea Party, the Democratic elected officials, rather than embracing the concept as it was articulated on a nonpartisan way, sought to demonize the Tea Parties. And it was only after 9 months of existence was its strength recognized and acknowledged, when I think Fox News was covering the news as they saw it, MSNBC and CNN were either ignoring or belittling, and I think the Tea Party became a more powerful movement in spite of, not because of, media attention.
And I think it's important to also recognize the Tea Party just didn't spring up out of nowhere. Voters have been frustrated about fiscal policy issues since before the Perot movement, and nothing has been done to address those underlying concerns. And while this frustration was there beneath the surface for many decades, the bailout legislation signed in the fall of 2008 seemed to just spark the anger. People said, that's when they said, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore. And while it didn't become a Tea Party immediately, that was one of the things that helped to coalesce this anger. And I think that's an important part of understanding the Tea Party movement. It's been building for a long time, and it will continue to build regardless of how it's viewed publicly.
Is there any meaningful Tea Party reaction yet to the Deficit Commission chairman's recommendations? It has things for both left and right to hate, much smaller government, but also some tax hikes. But the deficit is the Tea Party's number one issue, isn't it?
Spending is more important. Reducing spending is more important than deficit reduction to Tea Party activists and to most Americans.
Well, I'll give you one take, which is the Deficit Commission report is basically 75-25 spending cuts to tax increases. Tom Coburn, who's certainly one of the more conservative members of the Senate, has said he wants 90-10. So I suspect the Tea Party's reaction will be probably more negative than positive, but at the same time, I'd be hard-pressed as somebody who considers himself on the center-right to not see this as a unbalanced step in the right direction when you reduce spending, reduce marginal rates, and eliminate some deductions. That's certainly, I think, a good basis for beginning conversation rather than something that Nancy Pelosi et al. Have said is unacceptable.
Scott, how important is that distinction that you just made between deficit reduction and small government as a core value?
It's a very important distinction. The notion that the deficit is a problem is shared widely. People are concerned about passing on the debt to their children and grandchildren. But they believe that the core problem is that government spending has gone up. And, you know, on a year-to-year basis, total government spending in the United States hasn't declined since 1954. So there's a long history of this that's led to this frustration. And when you talk to a Tea Party activist or to most Americans, they believe that reducing government spending will help the economy, and that at the same time helps to reduce the deficit.
Damon and Elizabeth. Damian, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
I wanted just to point out that, and this is the core fiscal conservative values that have been such prominent in the Tea Party are actually values that the Republican Party abandoned. And had George Bush been able to be elected once more, you know, the same people probably would have been against him, because I think the big issue for Tea Party members is the fact that Washington seems content to spend, and not really take into consideration how much money is coming in and what actually that is doing to our economy.
So I
think it's an accountability issue, and then I guess Obama just had the fortune of coming right after George Bush and putting it even further, or making an even bigger deficit and even bigger government than his predecessor.
So, Damian, would you be willing to cut Medicare and Social Security and the military if that's what it took to actually balance the budget?
I would, but with the idea would be, We have to do that. You know, it's not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when.
Damian, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. And Doug, is this where the seriousness of the Tea Party on the deficit will get challenged? Either they'll endorse some kind of compromise, like in these recommendations, higher gasoline tax, capital gains taxes, for example, with these other things, or dig in on the spending cuts only approach, which either has to gut Social Security and or Medicare and or the military, or it doesn't actually close the deficit.
I think we're talking about a process. I think it's a little too early to say, Brian, where the lines are going to be drawn. But I guess I would say that for the time being, the fact that we're starting the conversation about spending, about reducing the size of government and balancing the budget, if we can have a robust debate that the Tea Party participates in and reach a consensus as a country, that would be a good thing, regardless of where the Tea Party itself comes out.
By the way, let me tweak you on one thing. Did you say a minute ago that when the Tea Party started, Fox News just reported the news as they saw it, while MSNBC and others were out to denigrate? Wouldn't it be that MSNBC...
No, I didn't say that. You're misquoting me. I said that when the Tea Party movement started, it was either ignored by some media outlets,
mm-hmm.
Denigrated or belittled by others, covered by Fox News, and my point was that the Tea Party movement had sprung up, and Scott was very, very articulate in summarizing where and why it grew, but it was not fully recognized, I think, by anybody until really the summer of 2009, by the rallies in April of 2009, which I thought were quite significant and prompted us to sharpen our focus in the book. I don't think we're really understood by anyone in terms of their significance. And so while you believe, Brian, and I know why you feel it, that somehow Fox News created it, rest assured it was far more a grassroots, spontaneous movement fueled by the Internet and rage about bailouts and high levels of expenditure than it was some right-wing media conspiracy.
Oh, yeah. No, and I didn't say that, and I don't believe that Fox News created it. I just think Fox News promoted it at the same time that MSNBC denigrated it.
Okay, I'm not sure I'd use the word promoted, but certainly I'd agree with the denigration by MSNBC.
And Brian, when you were talking a moment ago on the entitlement issues, one of the things that Doug and I mentioned in the book is that the problem we face today is there is so little trust in the government by all Americans. Only 1 out of 5 believe the government has the consent of the governed. That when a decision is finally reached, we're recommending that Congress take its best pass, but then let the American people vote directly on it. It is the only way that you can document that these changes will have the popular support needed to endure.
We thank all our Tea Party supporter callers. We thank Scott Rasmussen and Doug Schoen, authors of Mad as Hell, How the Tea Party Movement is Fundamentally Remaking Our Two-Party System. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will meet two of our listeners who tied for first place in our Predict the Election Results contest. The prize was to come on the show. How Google Street Views may have helped catch a criminal, but not all the neighbors are happy about it. And the New York Times On Language columnist Ben Zimmer on President Obama's rusty Indonesian and other U.S. presidents who could speak languages other than English. Stay with us.